This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Shawik. Now, everybody's using ChatGPT these days, or at least talking about using it, whether it's for academic writing, creative use, daily planning, coding, legal decision making, or healthcare, among other uses. Joining me today for his regular show, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh, and I'm going to ask him to share his thoughts on whether the field of orthopedics would benefit from the use of AI chatbots like ChatGPT, and how healthcare professionals should face the advent of artificial intelligence. Dr. Rajesh, thank you so much for joining me. How are you?
You are welcome. It is always a pleasure to be here.
I have a feeling you agreed to the topic just so you could do that.
I've been waiting such a long time.
The thing I think about AI today is that it wouldn't sound like that, would it?
So this is why I put that up, right? There's almost nothing I do without a reason. And the issue is expectations. And that sort of little play on sound was to put into perspective people's expectations of what AI is. Now, AI has been around for a long time. You know, this, when you type in text and it doesn't autocorrect, that's actually AI. That's an algorithm. Mm-hmm. And since word processors first started, like in the old days, when word processors absolutely first started, there was no autocorrect. There was just you press the button and the text appears on screen. Autocorrect only came into sort of the software world much, much later. So this idea that AI is somehow new is really the first thing that I wanted to tease out and say that AI is not new. The application of technology in our interactions with the computer is not new. But at what point does an automation become intelligent? Now, that's a conversation that we can have.
And I think the idea of chatbots, AI-driven chatbots, are not new either. If we've ever used some sort of platform to get automated answers, right? When you seek a service and there's this window that pops up and says, how can I help you? And they give you these automated answers based on what is the service you desire. We've already had some form of interaction with chatbots in that sense.
So I think the key word here is intelligence, right? So it's not this issue of interaction. We've been interacting with machines for a long time. We've been interacting with computers for a long time. But this idea of what is it that makes intelligence? And I think that's really the crux of the matter. You know, how do we define intelligence? What do we consider to be intelligence? You know, intelligence for a two-year-old, what we define as intelligence for a two-year-old would be different to the intelligence for a crow, would be different to what we would define as intelligence for or intelligent behavior for a university student or intelligent behavior for a school child. So this idea, I think, that sort of captivated the public's imagination is perhaps a misfiring of the term intelligence.
Have you tried using ChatGPT, Dr. Rajesh?
I have. I used it in terms of trying to set university assessments and to see what sort of replies what answers my students will get. And it's pretty interesting. It's, you know, I think certainly from an educational perspective, and when I say educational, I don't mean me talking as a professor at sort of an academic institution. I mean more the sort of how do people improve their knowledge on a subject. I think ChatGPT is very, very good there, because one of the challenges with trying to find information, if you pull up a search engine and you try to find information, you're getting a very strongly biased perspective of information, right? And the best way I can demonstrate that is if you search a particular string, if not now, then when, if not us, then who, right? So let's sort of, that's sort of a phrase that has meaning, and that phrase that has meaning cannot be understood by our current search engines. It can only do a page rank and say, well, these are the most popular things that people are looking for. So, you know, it's the worst of the democratization of information. You know, so democracy as a philosophy isn't perfect. The current way in which we use information or information is available to us is also not perfect. And I think this sort of this glimmer of hope is this idea that we could filter some of that, what's the word, disadvantage, or have a new tool in which to look, or new lens through which to look at and for information. And, you know, I think that's probably where I think this will go in the future.
But tools like ChatGPT, generative AI models, have to learn from information that's fed to it. And in this case, the internet, websites that are online, books, news articles. So aren't we still drawing on the same resources to gain that knowledge?
Okay, yes and no. So let's start with this now. The idea is that we have a new tool, and the context in which the tool is applied is important, because the tool derives its information from the context in which it is put. So let's look at that article that we discussed from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, which had basically asked this question, how useful is ChatGPT? And the answer is, the more technically specific your question is, the better the quality of information that you get. Now, well, why is that? It's because the quality of information available on highly technical subjects is of much better quality than the information available on the subject at a low level. So for argument's sake, let's look at anterior cruciate reconstruction, right? So that was the question that was asked. If you say, tell me your experience of having an anterior cruciate ligament reconstruction experience, you'll have a lot of divergent opinions from the data set that's available for the machine to learn from. Because somebody would have had a terrible experience and say, it's the worst thing ever. I'm starting a campaign to ban ECL replacements. They're the worst thing since sin. Whereas somebody else would have said, well, for me and my entire sports team, it's allowed us to complete our careers. So you see, there's a lot of noise. And so when you ask something to dip into that noise and give you information, you're really going to get either black or white or gray. Whereas if you talk about a very technical topic where the opinions would be very few and circumscribed to looking at a perspective left or a perspective right on something, then you're much more likely to get you're much more likely to get a non-noisy view. So the challenge with sort of regenerative, I wouldn't call it AI, what would I say? Regenerative search strategy, a regenerative search engine. I'd probably prefer to call them regenerative search engines, because if you look back to the history of the internet and you look at sort of bubble sort or the first algorithms that were used by the popular search engines to decide what searches are relevant and what searches are not relevant, it's a different paradigm to that. And I think that's one of the things that people have to understand. They have to understand that we're looking at information from a different paradigm. We're not looking at information from what's popular. We're looking at information based on what's common, but not necessarily based on what's popular. And so I think that the direction that we're going to go in is completely unknown. What will happen when 1,000 regenerative searches are performed on 1 million regenerative searches are performed on 10 million regenerative searches? Exactly the point. So that's the question that we should be asking. We shouldn't be asking, you know, what can AI do for me tomorrow? We should be asking, what's the information going to look like after it's been worked through so many times? And that's really, I think, where the future is going to be with this.
It may not be based on what's popular. It would be what's common. But would it give me something useful?
it'll give you a starting point. And I think that's one of the things that I encourage my students to go ChatGPT their assignments. And I encourage them to come back with what is it that sort of ChatGPT's come up with, and then have a conversation about that. But again, you know, this stuff's not new. It's about information, misinformation, useful information, and relevant information. So I would have set a topic for a student discussion, for example, and the student would come up with their PowerPoint slides that they're wholesale just chaplunked from the internet from somebody else's work, and start presenting the slides. And then I turn off the slides and I say, okay, what's the next point? And they don't know. And so in that sense, the internet in its entirety, all the available resources in their entirety have not helped my student understand the subject at all, because the student's completely uninterested in the subject. So when you come to looking at direct patient care, the question that has to be asked is, the patient has to learn to ask the correct and relevant question. And you cannot ask the correct and relevant question within a specialist topic unless you know about the topic, right? So you see where that sort of challenge comes. So, and you can't ask it in sort of very general terms. You can't say, you know, what's the best treatment for a broken wrist? Because, you know, it's not a very intelligent question.
Mm-hmm.
Can say something like, for a 70-year-old osteoporotic woman in a non-dominant hand with a minimally displaced distal radius fracture of no more than 3 fragments, what's the correct treatment? But there was a lot of relevant technical information in order to be able to ask the right question. So I think that's really where sort of it stands. I actually think that these regenerative tools are probably more relevant for professionals rather than the public. They really, really are really relevant for professionals. And the reason is because we already know quite a lot about a topic. We already know quite a lot about the layout of the knowledge within the topic, but we may not know all the relevant facts within that subdomain of the topic. And so I think that's probably where this is going to come in particularly handy. And, you know, initially, of course, you're going to see this marketing, you know, X, Y, or Z hospital will say we're the first hospital to use AI. Well, yes, but they use it to look at whether billing is done correctly or not. I'm not very sure whether that's a really great example or whether you should just open an Excel sheet and apply some filters and have a look at it. So this question of what do we apply it to, I think is a very important question. You know, certainly in its early days, there'll be a lot of noise around marketing. There'll be a lot of hype around it. But the question always fundamentally remains, do I have all the information in this situation to make the best decision possible for this person, given their circumstances? And, you know, any tool that helps me to do that is certainly something that I would welcome.
We'll go for a quick break and continue this discussion when we come back. Consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh joining me virtually today to explore the question of whether ChatGPT and AI tools are useful for the field of orthopedics. Stay tuned to Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Shao-ik. On the show with me today, consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh, and I'm talking to him about ChatGPT and the role of generative AI models in orthopedic medicine. So, Dr. Rajesh, what are the limitations in your field currently that you feel stand in the way of you being able to have all that information, right? Before the break, you were talking about what would help healthcare professionals to make decisions would be having the relevant information at hand. And would AI be the tool to help healthcare professionals to do that?
Okay, let's break it up into a couple of parts, right? So let's talk about implementation. A lot of the challenges in healthcare surround delivery and implementation. So I'll give you a simple example. A lady came to me exactly as I described with a broken wrist. And I looked at it and I said, in my knowledge, skill and experience, if you don't put this in a cast and you move it early and aggressively, you'll have a deformity, but you will have very little pain and very good function. Then she goes off to St. Elsewhere, and St. Elsewhere, the doctor says, oh, this is broken. We must put it in a cast. And so he puts it in a cast, and 6 weeks later, she comes out of a cast, and she's horribly stiff. Now she has a wrist that's both deformed and stiff, and as you try to overcome the stiffness, it's painful. So in this situation, I fail to see how AI is going to make a difference, because she was subject to incomplete information out of context. She was given the correct information in context, but she was unable to make the correct choice. And by definition of correct, as in, had she made that choice, the outcome would fit in with what she expects and her values. You know, so I'm not convinced. I see AI as just being another tool like my X-ray or my ultrasound or a CT scan, or for that matter, even a drill. You know, in the old days, people used to drill bone using hand drills. So like, you know, sort of a little drill and a chuck and little sort of thing, and you turn it around and you drill bone. But now we have power tools. And after power tools, we have very high power tools. And then after very high power tools, we have miniaturization and microization of the same basic tool that allows us to do more things better in a more sophisticated manner. But the principles in orthopedics are already set. They're, you know, it's a centuries old tradition. And because the principles are set, the techniques can certainly be looked at to say, well, does this technique or that technique meet or distract from the principle? So I think that the current use of these regenerative technologies in orthopedics is basically nil. And the reason why I say that is because they're not trained on the correct data set. So I give you an example. Imagine, let's talk about drills now. So imagine that we're in a situation where drills haven't been invented, and somebody invents a drill that is used in the mining industry. It's a sort of massive house-sized tool that's used to dig holes kilometers deep into the ground. That's the definition of a drill. Now I look at that and I go, man, you know, if I had something small that could be used to puncture holes into bone that I could use, that would be really helpful. But he says, no, that's not available. You either get this or you get nothing. And so I think that's the challenge I see with these technologies at the minute. You've got this massive behemoth that cannot be scaled to specific purposes. Or I wouldn't say cannot be scaled, but that sort of the interest in scaling to specific purposes isn't exactly there. Because if you think about that context and you say, well, okay, I mean, if you say to me, when will I get excited about AI? I'll get excited about AI when I'm given a tool that I can point that tool to a set of information. I can say, here is the cumulative orthopedic knowledge in German, French, English, Russian for the last 300 years. Go read it all and then come talk to me. Now, that's a conversation I'd love to be able to have. That's a conversation that's relevant to me because I can't read French, I can't read German. But there's a ton of information available about orthopedic practice in French and German. And I would love to be able to have a conversation with somebody who was literate in French and German, who'd read all those books. And that would be a regenerative tool. So when I can point to an AI and say, let's have a conversation about the treatment of fractures from the year 1600 to 1630 in these languages, and have that conversation in a natural language like English, that's something that's exciting because I can't do that now with the current search engines. I can't open Google and say, you know, tell me about that search string because the technology doesn't exist. So the technology as it stands is completely useless in orthopedics. I mean, it's a toy, you know, it's certainly a you know, something shiny that's probably worthwhile having a pickup and look at, but nothing that can make a material difference yet. that's sort of from the public version of sort of ChatGPT, right? But if you look at artificial intelligence as in the application of artificial intelligence in the field of medicine, now that's exploding. That's exploded, exploding, and relevant on a day-to-day basis. So one of the things that we do for patients is we take an ultrasound of the heart, and it takes a skilled technician quite a lot of training time and effort to be able to make the correct measurements to give us useful information. Now, I just came across a tool that can do the same thing in under 30 seconds. Because what the tool does is it basically automates the series of actions that the technician would have taken and then does all the calculations that the technician would have done quickly. So would you call that AI? Probably not. It's not because there's no intelligence about it. It is the application, it's the application of established knowledge in an algorithm to seek out useful information that was previously done in a laborious manner by hand. And that's the definition of a tool, isn't it? A tool is a device or a machine that makes work easy. The first tools were simple levers because a lever is really a machine that changes one force into another force, right? So if the question is ChatGPT useful in orthopedics today? Answer is as about as useful as teeth on a bull. If you say to me, is artificial intelligence, is this idea behind what's powering ChatGPT potentially useful? I'd say it's more valuable than gold, really, because that's what you can do with it in terms of taking human endeavors to the next level. Because for information to be used by people, we have to have that information. We have to have access to the information. We have to understand that information. We have to be able to digest and apply that information. And all our current sort of tools, our windows now, restrict that because we cannot interact with that information in a meaningful way. So I can see a two-dimensional picture that was useful, but now I have applications which present me that same information in three dimensions. Mm. It's absolutely hilarious because I've got my iPad out and, you know, I'm walking around in my anatomy class and, you know, students ask me something and I show them on the application and they say, oh my God, that's a great application. We got to get it. So go ahead and get it. They get it and then just sit there and they don't use it because it's not the application that's amazing. It's the understanding which was demonstrated on the application that's amazing. Now, would it have been possible to demonstrate that understanding without the application? Yes, but in a very clunky and limited way because, you know, I can't sketch, I can't draw, I can't scale things in 3D in real time. So I can't present that information that I have or the insight that I've gained. Whereas using the application, I can. And I think that's probably, again, and that anatomy application was first produced by a specialist publisher based on a technology platform. So the platform was built and then the data is entered. Then that publisher was bought, or that sort of independent publisher was bought over by a larger commercial publisher. And that larger commercial publisher is now integrating their current stream of products into that particular application, right? So in that way, I think the real excitement for me is the fact that somebody's made a drill. You know, it may be this thing that's as big as a house that's only used for drilling holes in the ground for mining companies, but heck, somebody's made a drill. Now, somebody else is going to make a drill that's smaller and lighter and faster and smaller and lighter that's faster that's eventually going to get into my hand. And once I get that tool in my hand, that's where the excitement begins because I can then use that tool to mine that information that I've spent a lifetime surveying to say that in this context of practice, this is the information that's useful and relevant.
The fear about AI is always it's going to take over our jobs, it's going to get out of control. But everything that you're saying is that AI at the end of the day is a tool that we use to make processes smoother and faster. So in your opinion, it wouldn't be able to supplant the kind of judgment that a healthcare professional has.
Absolutely. And I asked this question of a radiologist colleague of mine because one of the sort of early adopters of artificial intelligence in the context they were talking about was actually radiology, where they look at films and then they try to make a decision of, you know, is this correct, is this wrong? And one of the sort of fundamental flaws with that, so when you shoot an X-ray, basically you're taking a three-dimensional object, squashing it into a single plane, and then you're trying to make an interpretation on that plane. Now, almost all the work on sort of image processing for radiology has been done on the single plane image. Whereas the doctors read it with a 3D template in their mind already. So we take this sort of 2D image, which we then hydrate into a 3D mental map, and then look at that picture that way. So imagine how much of a disadvantage you have just put the competition against, because the computer doesn't know that. The computer cannot understand that. The computer can only understand what's presented to it on a flat plane. So, you know, those are pretty fundamental mistakes. And these are not sort of new, these are not old insights. These are insights probably in the last 2-3 years. To say that our application of computer science in this field is like a one-legged stool. It's not very stable. Whereas if you had a three-legged stool, it's a lot more stable. So, you know, there's a lot of the application, but the application to supplant humans, not yet. The application to assist humans, definitively. The applications to assist humans in an intuitively meaningful way, yeah, maybe sometimes. The applications for practice in terms of checking decision-making, absolutely. The analogy that I love to use is the auto park on my car. So when you press, you know, when you put, assuming your car has a camera at the back, and then you put it into reverse, there are lines on the grid. And even though your car's not moving, if you turn your steering wheel, the lines move. Then if you get too close to the pillar, the car beeps. Now, I'm still not confident letting the car park by itself. I just, you know, I've just got this super uncomfortable feeling that it has no idea what it's doing. Not that it can't do it correctly. You know, objectively, you can demonstrate to me that, you know, the car will park itself correctly 5,000 times. But me as the person in the car going, this is super uncomfortable, you know, ooh, it went really close to that pillar. Ooh, you know, that just narrowly missed it. Oh my God, why is it going so fast? So those are the human aspects, right? Now, eventually one day, we'll get beyond the excitement of just having a drill and actually sort of find one that's suitable to our purpose. And then, you know, my definition of AI in that situation would be that there's an analysis of what parking styles I'm comfortable with, and then within its available data set, it just picks what I'm comfortable with and then does that for me. So that would be my definition of intelligence. The definition of intelligence is the ability to contextualize and apply. And I think in the current tools that we have, while we can converse, they still cannot contextualize and they still cannot apply. So in that sense, there's no intelligence at all.
Yeah. In preparation for this interview, I did ask ChatGPT to summarize the use of itself in the field of orthopedics. And, you know, we've already discussed, you know, how it would look through data sets, help in sort of cutting through the noise. But one thing it did suggest was that it can act as a virtual assistant in answering patients' questions, you know, for patient engagement, let's say post-care, sort of that follow-up process. What are your thoughts on that?
Did you just compare my opinion to a computer's?
That was...
So, the challenge with doing those things is contextualization. In a sort of American one-size-fits-all standard model, then yes, but not in the lived experience. So a patient who has a cast on in Malaysia says it's really itchy, and I put some bedak sejuk and then use a lidi to dig deep inside. Now, I'd love to see ChatGPT give me a context of that, right? So the suggestion is correct, provided that the person has a stereotypical experience, right? Which is not the thing in healthcare. People don't have stereotypical experiences in healthcare. People have personalized individual experiences in healthcare. And I think that the use of these sorts of technologies will be in the journey, in the ability to compare millions and millions of journeys that patients have through the healthcare system, particularly in institutions. So say, for example, let's look at a chemotherapy ward. So let's say that somebody has a medical condition that requires an intervention, multiple points of observation, where looked at individually, they may mean something, and looked at collectively, they may mean something else, with a whole bunch of many-to-many variables. Now, in that situation, we can gather the data, so we're gathering the data, but we're unable to put all the data together to make a meaningful picture. So I think that's where, again, it's just a tool. The challenge that I feel we as the public haven't sort of realized is, where do I get my hands on this tool? You know, I want me a piece of that. Where do I get me a piece of ChatGPT? You know, can I buy the software? Can I subscribe to the software? Well, I can, but for it to tell me rubbish, I can't point it to my data set. So to me, the excitement really comes when I can take this tool and purpose it for my purpose. You know, if I work with wood, I want a drill that drills wood. If I work with bone, I want a drill that can be used for bone. If I work with metal, I want a drill that can be used with metal. If I'm in oil and gas, I want a drill that can sort of make holes in the ground. But I want a tool appropriate to my purpose. And my sort of challenge with this excitement around ChatGPT is that it's the wrong, it's a lovely idea, it's just a useless tool.
What about ChatGPT in research, in preparing journal articles? There have been a lot of discussions about that as well. What are your thoughts?
Okay, I think that's really useful for looking at blind spots, because in that sense, we already have a great use case, in the sense that the data is relatively homogenous, right? Which is, you've got a bunch of people publishing in a way that's sort of not very variable. Okay, so but again, the question is, what data set is that information trained on? If you say, let's take an example, there's Google and Google Scholar. So if I was looking up, let's say Pyrex glass, borosilicate, let's say I was looking at borosilicate glass in Google, it'll tell me a lot of dishes that I can buy which are Pyrex. If I was looking up borosilicate on Google Scholar, it gives me a different set of information. Mm. It doesn't tell me about Pyrex dishes that I can buy. And borosilicate is the type of glass that's used in Pyrex, which is also used in laboratory equipment. So I think the excitement will be when you get a ChatGPT that's aware of what hat it's wearing. It's wearing the academic hat or it's wearing the social hat. But, you know, as human beings, we don't necessarily exist like that. We exist across both spheres. And the most interesting people are the ones with the most lived life experiences, because they're able to cross boundaries in terms of what's understood. So someone can say, well, this is a new problem to you, but, you know, in this industry, we've had this problem for years. So these are the sorts of situations, or these are the sorts of solutions which you would use. And I found that personally, you know, I do a lot of work in computer guidance, and I do a lot of work in sort of artificial intelligence in computer guidance for surgical procedures, because it's a really high-stakes situation where you're going to make a decision, and that decision is only based on your experience. What if there was a tool that could sort of say, well, based on the parameters that I agreed, this is the alternative? It's a lot like parking, right? So I'm going to park the car, I'm going to turn the steering wheel, but the computer's drawn the lines. And that computer can tell me, oh, you're really close to a pillar. And if I hadn't known that there's a cone behind me, it can say, look, there's a cone behind you that you didn't see because it's in your blind spot. So in those sorts of technologies, I work a lot with ultrasound. And a lot of the computer algorithms that we initially started working with my group were very heavily visual algorithms because I see the information on screen. But a very senior engineer came back to me and said, well, yes, but the fundamental technology that you're using is ultrasound. Ultrasound is an audio thing. Mm. So why don't you use audio signal processing algorithms as opposed to visual processing algorithms? And once we changed the direction of our work, basically, you know, we were just flying through the roof because what we needed came from a different industry that we had no sight to. Now, there's no ChatGPT. I cannot imagine in my or the next lifetime that there is going to be an iterative engine that could have given me that information short of lived life experience. Mm. You see?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting question. It's a delightful question to consider. It's a delightful question to consider because we're asking the question of what is the meaning of all this information that we have available to us? It's not just about cute cat videos and TikToks, right? So what is the meaning of all those cute cat videos and TikToks? And that's really the question they were starting to ask. And I think that's sort of the exciting part of what's going on.
You did talk about how you get your students to use ChatGPT and for them to use it as a starting point, right? Are you concerned that they will be generating their work purely based on ChatGPT?
Not at all, because the answer, the penalty for doing that is an automatic disqualification.
Can it be identified?
Yes, it can be identified. It can be identified not by another machine, but by a human being. So if I get a straight C plus to D student and they submit a work that's sort of A plus plus plus, I'm going to be very impressed. I'm also going to be having a very short conversation with them about their work. Now, if the A plus plus work turns out into a D minus minus conversation, I'll offer them a supplementary to redeem themselves. But it's unlikely to end well, you know. So it's nice to have it in terms of giving people who have no idea about the subject a starting point, right? And I think that's certainly not too hard. That's certainly something that's useful for students who are trying to learn a subject.
Isn't there already a flaw if they didn't even know where to start?
You said it, not me. See, that's what academics do. We just let the hole form and let them fall into it by themselves and then realize they're in a hole and then they need to come out.
Okay. Final thoughts, Dr. Rajesh?
Artificial intelligence is no match for organic stupidity.
And from organic stupidity, we learn, right?
No, from organic stupidity is the thing that will basically limit how far artificial intelligence can go. Because you can have tools, but the application of those tools are really the rate limiting step. And, you know, we as an intelligence, we as a species have created tools far in excess of our capacity to use them. And I don't see this being any different.
Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, as usual, sharing his very pithy thoughts on the use of ChatGPT in orthopedics. This has been Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.